the situation after the war, the response of her fellow people.
Well, that's a probably art squirrel.
It sort of brings some.
Sorry, I had to stop staying for that one.
Talks about just She-Ra, I think. I'm having a hard time because I'm doing the English where the sentences are, but I think it's passing out to Dalit.
Uh-huh.
Just saying, you know, talking about the She-Ra. Want me to go on?
Sure.
Okay, then I have the next category is like marching out of Edom, and I have that for a couple of suki, and then I have the start about Yael. You're looking, so I don't think it's right.
I'm not sure you get to Yael. Yael's at the end.
Right. No.
She talks about
Tabor.
No, it says, no, and
then,
no.
Oh, Bimesham Garbananath. Bimesham Yael. Okay.
The case of Yael, talking about
right.
The highways.
Right. It's more the highways than the Yael. Okay. Go on.
Okay, then it talks about Deborah.
Go on.
Then she has a message where she's criticizing or praising the different Shvatim.
Okay.
And that's where I stop.
Okay. So that's interesting. What you've done is you've picked up on names of different personalities mentioned in the Shira and sort of divided by the reference to name 1, 2, or 3, which is an interesting way of doing it. We'll come back to those names later on this morning, but that's one way of doing it. Yeah.
This isn't on the side, but to me, it's like she's talking about Matan Torah. You know.
Well, she certainly makes reference to Sinai, and we'll talk about that.
This isn't on the side.
Right. No. We'll talk about. We will talk about the Sinai reference to Matan Torah, which is really a reference to the revelation. Less to the giving of the Torah, part of Matan Torah, and more to the Gilui Shechina, the revelation, Zes Sinai, Yipnei Bnei Hashem Elokei Yisrael. We'll talk about that piece of it when we resume in the fall, because that's really the first unit that I want to delve into in depth, which is the relationship between the experience of Devorah in this battle and why she sees a Har Sinai metaphor for what's going on. That's an important topic. And it actually takes 3 psukim in the opening, or 2 psukim, in Pasuk Dalet, when she talks about God coming forth from Edom and marching through the fields. That's a reference to, from Har Seir, that's a reference to the experience of Har Sinai. I showed you the parallel to the Pasuk in Vezot HaBracha, where Moshe describes the Shekhinah arriving at Har Sinai from all directions. Here too, she describes the Shekhinah arriving on the battlefield as God emerged from Seir, marched forth from the fields of Edom. The land began to shake, and the water began to fall. God, the Shekhinah is coming. This is Sinai. So that's certainly a reference to the revelation of God as it empowers this battle. Any other efforts or ways of dividing the chapter? What else have we come up with?
I had a bit divided into a lot of different sections.
Okay.
I had the first 5 psukim praising Hashem. The second from Perek Bav to Yud and explaining the bad, telling the bad situation or the horrible situation in Israel at the time.
Right.
11 to 12 psukim as the people need, trying to get the people to awake to what's going on, 13 to 14, Barak's leadership. 15 to 18, the various tribes of Shvatim, of Israel, and how they were involved or not involved. 19 to 22 is the battle. 23 I couldn't place because it seemed out of place about Meroz. I kept that as a separate division. 24 to 27 is Yael's story. 28 to 30 is Sisera and the beauty. The thing he's supposed to get is his mother's lament, and 31 the good result.
Okay, very good. That's very close to the way I had it divided, which is necessarily right or wrong, just interesting division.
Alan, where did you put Deborah when she praises herself?
That's a very good question.
List her qualities.
Let's see.
That's a very good question because it's a very powerful piece of the Shira.
Right.
What pasuk is that?
It's
Pasuk Vav. Vav Zayin. Now, there's two sides to this page. You should be looking at the side that does not have bold on it. It's just plain text. It looks like this. It's just the text of the perek without any bold print. Okay? I'll get you to turn the page over a little bit later, but right now we're here. So, along Alan's division, I divided the Shira up as follows. Obviously, Pasuk Aleph, V'tasho Devorahu V'rak Ben Avinoam, is an introduction that is just a general statement. This is like Az Yashir Moshe V'nei Yisrael. The Shira doesn't begin. It begins after the word Limor. Before Pro'ot B'Yisrael B'Nadev Am Baruch Hashem, she's describing the background of when this occurred and how this occurred, when there was trouble in Israel, when the nation of God volunteered and came down, and she talks about that notion of the Am that volunteered, the Mitnadvim, often. Shimu Melachim Azinu Roznim, again I see that as an introductory statement, listen, O kings, hear, O princes, I am singing, I'm singing to God. Part of that introduction of Ashiru l'Hashem ki ga'oga'a, I will sing to God because He is great. That's not the story itself, that's the introduction. And similarly, Dalet and He, which are a description of the revelation of God's presence, is part of that Shira. I'm singing to God who appeared, who came, who marched forth, who emerged, who brought with Him a Sinai type experience or revelation. Harim nazlum ipnei Hashem zeh Sinai. So I see up to Pasuk He as a kind of introduction, her song and the description of the Gilui Shechina that enveloped the entire experience. Pasuk Vav gets a little more specific. V'himei Shamgar ben Anat, she's now talking about what exactly took place in the land of Israel that led to the need for this battle. So she talks about Chadlu Arachot, the roads became abandoned because of the enemy controlling the highways. People having to go about on their way through back roads, Yilchu Arachot Akalkalot. Chadlu Prazon B'Yisrael, villages began to be abandoned because you couldn't live in open cities, you had to live in walled cities. Until Ad Shekamti Dvorah Shekamti Em B'Yisrael, until I arose, Mother of Israel, Devorah, to save the day. Pasuk Chet, I wasn't sure where to put Pasuk Chet, except that it didn't really fit into the next piece. Yivchar Elohim Chadashim Ma'az Lachem Sharim, because they chose false gods or new gods, therefore there was war in the gates. Whereas Israel was unprepared for that war, Magenim Yireev Aromach Barvim Melech B'Yisrael, Israel didn't have a sword or a spear amongst 40,000. So I put that together with Chadlu Prazon B'Yisrael, with the challenge, the problem. The villages are being abandoned, the roads are being taken over, Israel is unprepared for battle, and yet because they have abandoned God, battle is coming, and they can't avoid it. Pasuk Tet, she shifts gears a little bit, and in Pasuk Tet she starts to talk about the battle itself. or the, let's call it the preparations for battle. Libi lechokikei Yisrael hamitnadvim ba'am. Again, that reference to the volunteers, the leaders, the people from the who came forth in order to be part of this campaign. Rochvei atanot zchorot yoshvei amidin v'holchei aderech sichu. She talks about the. Again, we had a discussion last week about which. Who those, the reference to the riders on the donkeys or the leaders are? Are they? Is she talking generally to people who hear the story to tell the story and sing the story, or is she again continuing the reference to the Chokekei Yisrael, the leaders of Israel, who will tell this story for generations to come? She talks in Pasuk Yud Aleph about Tzidkot Hashem Pirzanobi Solaz Yadul Hashearim Hashem. She talks about the place of the where they will tell the that the story will be heard, the story of the righteousness of God when they came to the gates, when the nation of God came to the gates. So all of that, I think, is kind of a you could even put it together with the previous section of the background, but I think it's a description of the drums of war beating. This is a great event. Tell the story. Relay the story. This story out is louder than the stories that you hear around those who draw the waters. Uri, Uri, Devara, Uri, Uri, Debishir, sing, O Devara, Barak, go and capture your enemies. The battle is starting. So through Pasuk Yud Bet is certainly, I would say, is an introduction divided into a description of God's role, Sukkim Dalet and Hay, the impact of the enemy on Israel in Psukim Vav Zayin and Chet, and the significance of this battle, the power of this battle in Psukim Tet Yud, Yud Aleph, and Yud Bet. Pasuk Yud Gimel, she begins to describe the roles of the tribes themselves. Psukim Yud Gimel to Yud Chet, you could divide as basically a list of the tribes of Israel, who came, who didn't, who fought, who stayed home, who volunteered, and who should be blessed, and who shouldn't. Az yarad sarid la'adirim ma'am Hashem yarad li ba'giborim, the remnant, the warriors, the mighty ones, the nobility, Ephraim, Binyamin, Machir, which is Menashe, Zvulun, they came, they engaged. Yisachar, Naphtali, she mentions at the end. Whereas Reuven, Asher, Dan, Gad, Gilad, those tribes are all sitting on the other side of the Yarden, are sitting up north, worrying about the bleeding sheep rather than about their wars. So certainly, from Pasuk Yud Gimel to Yud Chet, that's a very self-contained piece that focuses on the tribes. Who came, where, and when.
Would you do this with every shear? Or do you just, or some of them, you would divide like this?
Depends on whether or not I've had various Tanakh teachers in my years. Nechama used to drill into us that this was step one to any parak in Tanakh. I don't do it that often. I don't do it as often as I should. I think it's a very powerful tool. Because especially when you write it down and you divide it up, then you can approach each piece as a subject, and it's much easier to see to keep track of the forest and then to look at the trees themselves. I should do it more often than I do. But
every shear you could actually
every parak.
As yashir, whichever one.
Oh, every shear you're talking about? Every shear, sure. Every shira you certainly could.
Is that a better way to understand what's going on?
It's easier. I don't know if it's better. It's a tool that helps grapple with a long and complex text. It doesn't have to be with shira. You can do it with a story.
Right.
If you have a long story or a long perek, it's very helpful sometimes to take a step back, read through the whole thing, and then divide it and see where it shifts, you know, topic or focus. You can do it with any parak. Really, you can do it with any story. The truth is, you can do it with any text. It's not necessarily related to Tanakh. It's a pedagogical tool. But I think in the context of the study of Tanakh, it's very helpful, because we often see, it's particularly helpful in Chumash, because we never look at Chumash that way. We're so used to looking at Chumash either in Parsha units or Psukim units, the way Rashi comments. We are never really trained to take a perek or a subject in Chumash, take a step back, and now divide it and see what the various components are and how it fits together from a literary point of view. We're sort of trained not to look at Tanakh literarily, but there's such a word. All right. So we were up to, we had done Yud Gimel to Yud Chet. There you go. Psukim Yud Gimel to Yud Chet, the description of the tribes of Israel, who came, who didn't, who participated in the battle, who stayed home and worried about their parnasa, who she praises and whom she lets loose her wrath. Psukim Yud Tet through Chaf Bet. Ba'u melachim nilchamu az nilchumu acheknan b'tanach al megiddo b'tza kesev lo lakachu. She's now describing the battle. The kings of Canaan came. They fought. They fought over the cities of Tanakh. They fought over the cities of Megiddo. They came not for money, but they came because they wanted to destroy us. This is the beginning of the battle itself. Who fought this battle? Who, in fact, according to Devorah, led us in victory in this battle? That's a question to you from our discussion last week. Who does she attribute the victory to? Partially, but again, they're dealing with soldiers against chariots. Who brought them this victory? God. So when she begins to describe the battle, what she describes is God's role in that battle. Min hashamayim nilchamu. They fought from the heavens. Kochavim imisilotam, the stars in their shooting routes or courses fought with Sisera. Nachal Kishon grafam, the vadi itself swallowed them up. Flash floods and rain in the middle of the summer. Az halmuik vesus, their horses, the heels of their horses were confounded, were midarot darot abirav, they couldn't gallop, the wheels were caught in the mud. This is a description which we saw over the last couple of weeks of how the battle unfolded. How did they overtake the chariots of Canaan? The chariots were destroyed because the nachal itself suddenly filled up with water, flash flood, rain. She talked at the beginning about the streaming mountains and the skies opening up. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Oru Meroz, Alan, you raised an interesting question. Where did Meroz fit into the picture? But if I put Chaf Gimel and Chaf Dalet together, she curses the city of Meroz because they sat back and did not come to God's aid, to the aid of God amongst the warriors. Lezrat Hashem b'giborim. If she's cursing Meroz, why didn't she include them in the list of tribes earlier that were blessed or cursed according to their participation in the battle? Why does she separate Meroz from the rest of the tribes that she describes in the earlier section? And in together with Chav Gimel, she puts Chav Dalet, which is Tevarach Min Hashim Yael, Eshet Chever Akini. Why would she, if she's in section, I didn't number the sections, but Yud Gimel through Yud Chet, she lists all the participants of this battle, those who came and those who didn't. And then she describes the battle, and then subsequently she describes two more groups of people, Meroz and Yael. It is purpose, there's no question. Poses.
Meroz
with Yael.
Right.
So there's two possible reasons for that. Right. Well, she's always doing, she's always contrasting the positive and the negative. She did that with the tribes too.
Right.
The tribes who came, the tribes who didn't.
Right.
Meroz, Ya'el. Cursed one, blessed the other. Why does she separate them from the listing of the tribes? So there's two possibilities. One is simple chronology. The tribes arriving are part of the earlier part before the battle ensues. They take a census who came and who didn't. And this could be, and Ya'el is after the battle. So first I have the tribes who came and who didn't. Then I have the battle. Then I have what happened after the battle. Well, Ya'el's role was subsequent to the battle. Maybe Meroz's expected role would also have been after the battle. I didn't bring my map here, but Meroz is at the base of Emek Yisrael. And it could be that when the army fled, they were expecting Meroz to get involved in stopping the fleeing army or stopping Sisera, and they did not, the people of Meroz, and therefore she's critical of Meroz on the one hand and praises Ya'el on the other, in contrast to their role in the aftermath of the battle. So it may be a chronological distinction. It's one possibility. The other distinction may be, is Ya'el again, for the 12th time, is described to us as Eshet Chever HaKeni. Chever HaKeni means there is a national identity that is different from the rest of Israel. And Meroz may also have been a non-Israelite or Canaanite, or whatever nationality it was, or ethnic group it was, not Israelite city. And therefore this unit may actually refer to those not from within Israel. The previous unit dealt with the tribes of Israel that came or didn't. Now she's dealing with non-Israelites and their role in the battle, the local indigenous population. What role did they play? Meroz sat by and did nothing. Cursed Meroz. Ya'el got involved, took out Sisera, blessed be Ya'el. Which moves us directly into the next group outside of Israel, which is Aim Sisera and her Chaverot. So the image shifts from Meroz, Ya'el, Aim Sisera. Those are the peripheral personalities and peoples around us that are involved in the story, not from the Israelite perspective, but from the periphery, from the outside. There is absolutely in chronological sequence.
The background, there's history, there's...
The Shira is chronological.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Right.
No question, the Shira is chronological. And that's our structure. Which raises for us an interesting question, and that's really what I wanted to get to today as the conclusion or assessment of this Shira. When we compare Shirat Devorah to other examples of Shira in Tanakh, and there are many, what we find is both positive and negative. The positive is very easy. It's a very beautiful Devorah singing about God's victory and God's role and the great miracle and the tribes and their involvement, and she gives out blessings and curses left, right, and center, and she's giving everybody a score and a grade and their participation, and then she goes home. And the land is quiet for 40 years. When we look at it a little bit more in depth, we have a dilemma. And the dilemma starts from a very simple comparison. We intuitively, when we started this description, and a few of you earlier said there's a reference to Hysinai at the beginning of the Shira. The reference to Hysinai is not an accident. The entire Shira reminds us of another biblical event. What event, and we've actually done this comparison, what event in Chumash is the story of Devorah and Barak's victory over Sisera reminiscent of? Specifically? Kriyat Yamsuf. Kriyat Yamsuf. The parallel between the Battle of Sisera and the Battle of Mitzrayim at Kriyat Yamsuf is very, very similar. They're both taken out by drowning the army in, or the chariots in
water.
They both conclude with Shira. Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael V'tasha Dvarah V'arak Min Avinu. Even the reference to how the battle unfolds, Vayahom Hashem et Sisra, God confounded the army of Sisra, is a direct parallel to Vayahom et Machane Mitzrayim, God who confounded the camp of Egypt by drowning, by getting their chariots mired in the mud of the Yam Suf. So the entire experience is set up as a parallel between these two events. And Devorah is not unaware of that parallel. Her invoking Zeh Sinai Mipnei Bnei Yisrael, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, is there as a kind of notice the reference point comment. As I've said many times, every parallel in Tanakh is designed to be also a contrast. I have yet to find a single parallel that doesn't have some contrast associated. And from the parallel to the contrast is actually quite striking. Compare this Shira to Shirat HaYam. And what you find is disturbing. In what way? Why don't we flip to Shmot Perek Tedvav? Tedvav, chapter 15. Read it. Take 2 minutes. Read it through. Hebrew, English doesn't matter to me. Read it through and answer one question. Whom is Moshe singing about? Don't answer it yet. Just read it through. Right. Whom is Moshe singing about? So the question of how the Shira was actually sung, did Moshe sing and they responded verse by verse, or did Moshe sing each verse and they responded with a chorus? But I'm not so much concerned with who's singing right now in terms of rather the text itself. Who does the text speak about in Shirat HaYam? Give people a chance to finish reading it first. Okay, Shelley, now let's put it on the
when
table.
When you asked the question, my immediate thought was that Shirat Devarah is all about the human involvement.
But a lot.
Right. Well, there's the introduction, Asher Lashon. But basically, it's a catalog of human interactions. And the Shirat HaYam is really about God's glory and how God saved the people.
Shirat, let me repeat it again, because I think this is the critical point. Shirat HaYam is all about God's role in the victory. Az Yishir Moshe Avnei Yisrael, Ashiru LaHashem Ki Go'o Ga'a Sus V'Lachvod HaMa V'Yam. I will sing to God. And if you look through the Shira, just count the psukim. Count every verse in which Moshe speaks about God. Simple numbers. I have how many psukim in total? I have 19 psukim. So of these 19 psukim, how many speak about God and God's role? About what God did? And how many psukim is God the subject of the verbs? It flips back and forth. There's psukim that talk about God, and there's psukim that talk about the drowning Egyptians.
Right.
right? There's psukim that talk about God, there's psukim that talk about the drowning Egyptians. There are no psukim about Israel, about the people. None. Now it's true, Shirat Hayam begins, Kriyat Yamsuf begins with a declaration, Hashem Yilachem Lechem Vatem Tacharishun. This is God's battle, you'll be silent. But go back to Perek Daleth. When Barak said to Devorah, come with me, because I want the Navi with me, I want the staff of Moshe with me, and Moshe's response, and Devorah's response was, if I come with you, the victory belongs to God and not to you. If I come with you, you won't be able to take credit. So when she sings, I would have expected her to focus on God's role, which she does. She mentions Min Hashemayim Milcham, where they fought from the heavens, and she talks about the shooting stars, and she talks about the revelation and Gilui Shechina and Har Sinai, and it's a total of five psukim. It's a total of five psukim. You can count them. In five psukim, she talks about God. What are they? What are the five psukim? Gimel, Anochi LaHashem Ashir, Anochi LaHashem Anochi Ashir LaHazam LaHashem Elokei Yisrael. Dalet, Hashem B'tzedcha Miseir B'tzedcha Misde Adom. Hey, Harim Nazlu Mipnei Hashem Zeh Sinai Mipnei Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Yud Tet Baum Malach. Chaf, Min Hashemayim Nilchamu, if you want to talk about Min Hashemayim, is referring to God. And Nachal Kishon Grefam, if you talk about, that's not real, that's about Nachal Kishon. Here's four psukim. Lamed Aleph, Ken Yovdu, Kol Evecha Hashem, O'avav, Ketzet Hashemesh, B'Gvurato. So all your enemies should be destroyed. Five psukim. There's an arrogance. I will come back to that verse at the end. That's the most important verse in the whole Shira. And it's on that verse that Chazal come down on her. But significantly. So I want to come back to that, because I think if I didn't have that verse, and I didn't have the Gemara that points to that verse and says, this is problematic, I'm not sure I would have allowed myself to be critical of Shirat Devorah. I wouldn't have given myself that leeway. The only reason why I think we are legitimately sort of challenged to look at Shirat Devorah with mixed eyeglasses, both positive and critical, is because Chazal saw in that verse such a critical indictment of Devorah. But we'll come back to it in a moment.
Do you think that the other one had more involvement from all the people? Yeah, the people were directly...
Which one? Devorah.
No, the Moshe.
In Moshe's case, the people actually had less involvement because they didn't engage the enemy at all. At least in Shirat...
But they were all involved in the spirit of Hashem doing all of this.
They watched it. But they watched it from afar. Remember that Kriyat Yamsuf begins with the declaration, God will fight for you and you will be silent. They do not engage the enemy at all. There's no hand-to-hand combat at all in Kriyat Yamsuf.
They're all singing.
Okay. But she doesn't talk about who's singing. I'm not so interested in who's singing. I'm interested in who is involved in the battle. And in the battle, in the case of Sisra, Israel was more involved than they were in Kriyat Yamsuf. After Nachal Kishon flash flooded all the chariots, Israel, Barak, Devorah says to Barak, kum, go now, engage your enemy, and they go down into the valley, and there is a hand-to-hand combat, and they do fight and chase Sisra's army all the way back to Chavashat HaGoyim, and they do fight by the sword. So there's certainly more involvement of Israel, and therefore, rightfully, she could and should acknowledge the role that Israel played. And I'm not suggesting that she should make no reference to their role. I am suggesting that her priority and emphasis is misplaced. And the proof is, if I only had Shirat Hayam versus Shirat Devorah, I would have no basis for that claim. But I have actually two paradigms of Shirat to compare Shirat Devarah to. I have Shirat Hayam on the one hand, a paradigm in which God fought the entire battle, and the Shirat is all to God. But there's another paradigm. And the other paradigm is Shirat David. And if I compare Shirat Devarah to Shirat David, as we're about to do, then the question becomes even more critical. Because the one thing we can say about David HaMelech is that in every battle he ever fought, there was absolutely no supernatural, direct, miraculous divine intervention. The notion of Nisim did not occur in the entire world of David HaMelech. Hashgacha, divine providence, protection, yes, David HaMelech sings to God in every praise. But the notion of Kriyat Yamsuf style, Mamar HaSinai style, as Devorah describes, Zeh Sinai, Yifnei Hashem Elokei Yisrael, David's battles did not have any of that kind of character. They were all fought with the sword, the spear, and the arrow. And if you flip to Shmuel Bet, Perek Chaf Bet, Shmuel Bet Chaf Bet. By the way, I'm not going to go through Shirat David with you inside, line by line, because it's too long for us right now. But Shirat David is built also on the paradigm of Kriyat Yamsuf. As ironic as that may sound, but he takes all the imagery from Kriyat Yamsuf. He talks about waves covering his enemy, and he talks about the waters of trouble that enveloped him, and he was able to emerge from that with God's help, etc. So what I'm going to suggest is, if you look, for example, just as one brief example, Pasuk Hey, Afafuni Mishperei Mavet Nachalei Bliyal Yiva'atuni. Was enveloped in the waves of the rivers of the evil ones who confounded me, who caused me fear.
You look at 16.
16 is there too. Saw the waves of the sea, the depths of the foundations of the earth were revealed. God's breath of through his nostrils confounded the enemy. What I want you to do is just read through the Shira, Hebrew, English, whatever you understand best, and look at this question. Whom is he talking about? What is the subject of the Shira? You don't actually have to read the whole thing. You can read, skip parts of it. You can go from pasuk to pasuk. I think you'll find the same theme on every pasuk. It's all about the victories that he's had on the battlefield because God helped him.
So it's he now instead of you.
Right. He's talking in the third person. But it's all about, but it's a capital H. It's all about God. The first half is all about God, and the second half is about his success in the battlefield, but how he saw the Malach of the Ribbono Shel Olam sitting on every arrow that he threw. That is the classic paradigm of Shira. That, by the way, is the paradigm of Hallel. And that's why David HaMelech is the composer for Tehillim, and composer for Hallel, and composer for Shira, because that's exactly what the paradigm is supposed to be. That's the ideal. Where we fight the battle, but we attribute the victory to God. The moment we attribute the victory in any way to human effort, and we detract from God's role, providential role, we are in problematic waters.
So that's what she,
and that's where Shira Tavora begins to derail. Now, let's do the other paradigm. Let's go to the other extreme. Do I have examples of Shira in Tanakh that is songs of victory? Remember, Shira in Tanakh is always songs of victory over battles. That's true about all Shira in Tanakh. Maybe the exception of Hazinu, but even Hazinu includes battles, but the battles to come. But Shira, classic Shira, Shirat Hayam, Shirat Devorah, Shirat David, is about battles. Shira about battles in which the songs are songs of victory, not to God, but to the human victor or warrior. Do we have such examples? And what is the result of those songs? They always spell trouble. Always. Without exception. Yeah.
But in this case, it's even more important for Dvorah to put God at the highest level, because she's a woman, and they are not going to accept that a woman is going to be the...
You know, it's interesting. I'm not sure, given the fact that she's a Navi, and her role is that of a Navi, not a warrior. Right?
She said once, I am a woman, and...
Yeah, we talked about, I think, I want to know, I'm not sure if you were here, we talked about that verse where she says that if I go with you, God will give you this battle into the hands of a woman. What she means there is not so much the woman-man issue as much as the Navi versus warrior issue. I'm the Navi. They'll attribute the victory to me.
Yes, no, but it's true that David did also that, and he was a man. But for her, it was even more important.
Maybe. I'll accept that. Now, what are the classic examples of Shira to the victor that always spell trouble? So I'll give you the most famous first. Most famous, and they're usually very short, because Tanakh doesn't spend a lot of time on these songs, because they're so problematic. The most famous that caused the most trouble. Most famous that caused the most trouble. Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Chet. Yud Chet. Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Chet. Vayihi, Pasuk Vav. Vayihi, Bivoam, Bishuv, David, Mehakot, Et HaPlishti. When David returned from his battle against the Plishtim, Vatetzena Hanashim, Mikol Arei Yisrael, the women came out from amongst all the cities of Israel, Lashir, for song, Vahamcholot, and for dancing, Likrat Shaul HaMelech, to greet Shaul HaMelech, Bitupim, Bisimchah, Bishalishim, with drums and with joy and with cymbals. Vata'anena anashim ha-mesachakot vata'marna, and the women sang and they said, Hika Shaul ba'alafav v'David berivavotav, Saul in his thousands, David in his myriads. And of course, who's missing from that Shira? God. If the women would have come and sung about God, neither David nor Shaul would have been bothered by the song. But this song is the beginning of the source of the great conflict that leads to the great civil war between David and Shaul, and between the people of Yehuda and the people of Benjamin. And it's a civil war that will last for years. Ultimately, a civil war we never recover from. And it begins because they sang a song to the victor instead of to God. Now go figure out which is the greater victor. Five words. Some of the most problematic words in the history of Tanakh. And it was a song of victory to... What's wrong? Shaul didn't fight the battle. David didn't fight the battle. Of course they fought the battle. But the role of Shira and the role of Hallel is dafka not to sing to Shaul or to David, but is dafka to sing to Hashem. Another example. This is a little more subtle. I'll show you one more example that's not subtle at all. You all know the story of Yiftach, right? Did you say Yiftach?
She did.
Beautiful. What aspect of Yiftach? I don't think there are words to it. It's just a reference. You know the story of the tragedy of Yiftach's daughter, right? Tragedy of Yiftach's daughter who comes out and she's the first person to walk out of his house after he was...
He said
the first one who comes out of my house. Yes, of course, and the famous question of what he was who he was expecting to come out of his house. Right? His wife? What was he expecting? His dog? And Chazal actually very critical of Yiftach because of that question. They said, what was he expecting? A dog? He was going to offer a dog on the Mizbech? Well, what was going through his mind? So we will address that question, Bezrat Hashem, when we get to Yiftach. But if you look in Perikid Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Dalid, when she comes out to greet him, what is she coming out to greet him for? He's coming back and she's coming out to greet him because she wants to see her daddy? What does it say? Okay. It says, Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Vayavo Yiftach HaMitzpah El Beto, Vine Bito Yotzet Likrato Betupim Uvim Cholot. His daughter comes out to greet him with drums and cymbals and timbrels and dancing. Meaning, if you compare it to Shirat, to the Shir that they sang to David and Shaul, you see the parallel. She wasn't just coming out to greet him, hello daddy, thank you, coming home from battle. She was leading the women in song of victory to Yiftach, Likrato. Again, the problematic nature of Shira, not, well, we don't know it for sure, but the reference to Likrato,
oh, because of the parallel of the words,
the Pimim Mechalot, and the reference to Likrato, to greet him.
It says came out to meet him with the timbrels.
It says likrato.
Right.
Likrato, right?
Yeah.
Forget the English translation for a moment. Likrato means
to him.
And the him is problematic. The other one that we actually saw, working my way backwards, but the other shira that we learned last year or the year before, that also has that similar type of problematic nature, was Yeshua, Shirata Meknan, Malcheknan, where you have in Perek Yud Bet an entire chapter of Shira that describe the kings that we conquered. And there's not a single reference to God in that entire Shira. Not one. And it's enormously problematic. It begs the obvious question. What are the priorities in this Shira? Now, in the case of Shira Devorah, we have 11 minutes left, so let's go back to Shira Devorah. And I'm going to do one more exercise with you on the Shira. And to save time, I won't save time. Let's do it ourselves. Give me a list of all of the different groups that you mentioned in this Shira other than God. Anybody. Whom is she singing about other than God? Things. That'll bore them, write them all down. Pretend I'm writing them down. Kings. Who else?
All the villages.
Villages, inhabitants, the tribes. But tribes listed. Right? First of all, in Pasuk Vav, Bimei Shamgar Ben Anat, Bimei Yael. She talks about herself, but I'll come back to her to reference to herself. Pasuk Tet.
The
travelers.
The volunteers.
The Chokekei Yisrael, the leaders of Israel. those that jeopardize their lives to come to fight.
Right.
From in section 4, Yud Gimel to Yud Chet. I'm looking at the sheet because it's just easier to divide it that way. Adirim Am. Actually, if you turn the page over. Let's just do this simply. Turn the page over.
And the women.
Right. Turn the page over. I put it in bold. All of the various groups that she addresses in this Shira. Yitnadev Am, the volunteer people. Shamgar Ben Anat, Yael, Devorah, Libi L'Chokikei Yisrael, Adirim Am, the nobility, Ephraim, Binyamin, Machir, which is Menashe, Zevulun, Yisachar, Devorah and Barak, again in Pasuk Tetvav, Reuven, Gilad, Dan, Asher, Zvulun, Naphtali. Then she has a reference to Mina Shemayim Melchamu, Nachal Kishon. Is Nachal Kishon God's role? Yes, but Oru Meroz, Tevorach Minashim Yael, the curse to Meroz, the blessing to Yael, Em Sisra, Chachmot Pesarata. And then, Pasuk Lamed Aleph is very interesting, the end of the Shira, Ken Yavdu Kol Oyvecha Hashem. So should be the end of all of your enemies. Sisra, Em Sisra, Chachmot Sisra, all of the group of people, they should, all your enemies of Israel, or all your enemies of God should have come to such an end. The Ohavav Kitzet Hashemesh Bigvurato. And those that love God should, like the sun rising, have strength. So even in her conclusion is nuanced. Half to God and half to the Ohavav. Who are the Ohavav? The whole Chevra. Right? The whole group. The tribes who came and fought the battles, the Mitnadvim, Devorah, Barak, the whole group are Ohavav. And they should be blessed. And of course, Jackie is correct. The most problematic verse in this whole Shira is Ad Shakamti Devorah, Ad Shakamti Em Yisrael. Till I, this was the trouble, this was the status, the roads were blocked, the highways were closed, until I arose, O Israel, until I arose, Mother of Israel. Ad Shakamti Devorah, Ad Shakamti Em Yisrael.
If she had put Hashem in there, would she have been all right?
Anything would have been better than that. Take a look at the Gemara in Pesachim. You have it on the bottom of the source page? Amar of Yudah Marav. Kol amit yaher, anybody who becomes boastful or arrogant, im chacham hu chochmato mistalaket mimena. If he is a chacham, then his wisdom will depart from him. Ve'im navi hu nivuato mistalaket mimena. If he's a navi, his prophecy, power of prophecy, will leave him. Im chacham hu chochmato mistaleket mimenu mihilel. How do we know that if he is a wise person, if he's a chacham, and he is arrogant even for a moment, then his wisdom will escape him? From the story of Hillel. The amar ma hitchil mekantrim bidvarim, and that's a story that's actually related in the Gemara Masechim there, that's where the story is brought, about Hillel, who for a moment lost himself and expressed himself in a kind of arrogant way. This is how I, sort of was belittling those who were arguing with him, and the particular halacha escaped. It had to do with shrita of a korban pesach when erev Shabbos, when erev Pesach falls in Shabbos, not our issue. And he had to admit that he had heard this halacha and forgot it. Im naviu nivuato mistaleket mimenu. How do I know that if he's a navi and he's arrogant, his prophecy will escape him? Midevorah. That we learn from Devorah. As it says, Chadlu prazon biYisrael chadleilu ad shakamti Devorah shakamti em biYisrael, which the Gemara sees as an example of arrogance. And the result is, several psukim later, what does she say? Uri, uri, dvora. Uri, uri, dabri shir. Kum barak, ushvei shevichah ben avinoam. Awake, awake, O Devorah. So Gemara understands that to mean that she felt her nevuah leaving her, and she kind of had to wake herself up. Uri, uri, wake up, Devorah. What's going on? Wake up. Where's the nevuah? It's going, it's going, it's going, it's gone. Now, Chazal often couch their interpretation of Tanakh in metaphor, in these kinds of story type of terminology. What I think Chazal are really pointing to is everything that we've addressed today, which is not just one verse in the Shira that's problematic. It's not just the arrogance of Ad Shekamti Dvorah. It's the focus on the human element in the entire Shira of which she is a part. And so she includes herself in the list of those people who play the role in this event. Dvorah, Barak, the tribes who fought the battle, Naphtali, Yisachar, Ephraim, Binyamin, Yael, and those who didn't. But when you look at the whole Shira from a vantage point of what the role of Shira need be or should be, it's very problematic. And it's like that moment where everything was building to this crescendo, and she disappoints. And she lets it go. She misses that opportunity of creating that kind of Chilul Hashem, much like Moshe when he hit the rock at the end of his life, and he had that moment for an opportunity of Kiddush Hashem, and he let it go, whatever the particular circumstances were. And that, I think, ultimately is part of the tragedy of the aftermath of Devorah and Barak. The aftermath is another backsliding into the world of Midian. We are in a prelude to the story of Gideon. But I can't escape the observation that Chazal have that her role as a Navi comes to an end with this Shira. It's not the climax, her final, her greatest moment. It's her final moment. It's the end of Devorah's career as a Navi. She starts as a Navi sitting under the tree. Everybody's coming to her, etc. We're introduced to her as the great Navi of the people. And the Shira at the end, which is on the face of it so powerful and so beautiful, but when you start to analyze it beneath the surface, as Chazal did, you see that there's something that's not right in this Shira.
There is something I don't understand. And that is somebody who is like a warrior, or is somebody who is just, is not an actor, is somebody who is telling. So
Dvorah is, she's not, a Navi is not a warrior.
Okay,
a Navi is a
Navi. Was not a warrior. And
no.
She said what to do, and she stopped. And Yael came later to do the
correct. Test.
So it was, I don't understand why a position is not just positive. The way we see at her is just not negative.
Because, again, the story is the story of Barak as the warrior and Devorah as the Navi, and the relationship between them. That's the story. Her role as the Navi was to sing Shira at the end of the event.
Okay.
This Shira is a problem, because Shira needs to be about God and not about man. That's the point. And that's the point that Chazal pointed out. Shira is about God, not about man. And it has to be. Otherwise, it's always a recipe for disaster.
What did you say about 40 years after her?
Well, it says, Vatishkot ha'aretz arba'im shana. The land was quiet for 40 years, and then we're into the story of Gideon.
I have a question about format, because you talked about how Shira is written. Why is the pasuk Vatishkot ha'aretz arba'im shana looks like it's part of the Shira?
Because it's part of the same pasuk. Yeah, I don't think there's anything particularly significant about it. It's part of the same pasuk. Shirat Hayam ends the same way. Uvnei Yisrael alchu beyabasha betoch hayam. Vayashiv Hashem alehem et mei hayam uvnei Yisrael alchu beyabasha betoch hayam. It also is set out that way, even though it's not part of the Shira. It's just the end of the pasuk.
I'm just thinking about the whole period of Shoftim. It's this whole thing. It's sort of like they get so far, and then they backslide. And even the Shira, which is sort of a culmination, almost, you know, you reach the spiritual heights. You feel like you're getting there. And again, there's this, it doesn't quite make it. And it's sort of symptomatic of the whole...
Symptomatic of the whole period of time, correct. 100%. You never quite... And that's when you compare Devorah as a Navi. Now, it's an interesting question. Why is this Shira here? Let me phrase the question the other way around. Remember that Devorah doesn't write Sefer Shoftim. Shmuel does. Why is this Shira here? What role does this Shira play? Is it the role of Shira as Shirat HaYam was, as Shirat David was? Or is it to fill in the pieces of the story that I'm missing from Perek Dalet and I need from the events, from the description that she gives me in Perek Hay? Is the Shira here for the purpose of Shirat Nevuah or for the purpose of the prose and the storyline that is critical for understanding what took place? So if the Gemara says that her Nevuah or power of Nevuah escapes her at the beginning, that means that this, what the Gemara is saying, as dramatic and as profound as that may sound, is that this Shira was not said with the power of Nevuah. That her Nevuah escaped her at that moment. So what was it said with? Her assessment of what took place, which may explain why it's so strange, but also may explain what it's doing in the Sefer. It's not in the Sefer to tell me the Shira of a Navi. It's in the Sefer because I need to know the events of the story. That's what the book is chronicling. And I need those details from Perek Hay to explain what's missing in Perek Dalet. So you could go so far as to say that the purpose of the Shira is to tell me the story, not to be classic Shira of Tanakh, because it doesn't fit that paradigm.
Does she get any credit for the quiet 40 years or not?
Actually, yes, but I'm not... well, she, they both do. Devorah and Barak.
We come away where we thought it was positive.
Ambivalent. Mixed.
Right.
But, I mean...
Well, Barak doesn't come away any better.
Barak doesn't come away any better. But again, we're Shelley, you're correct. We're part of the spiral.
Right.
We're not at the top of the spiral. We're down here in the middle. We're one generation away from Gidon, and Gidon is going to be, you know, the next example. There's no... Up until Gidon, every single story that we've encountered is a positive but. And the but keeps getting bigger. In the story of Gidon, it's huge. The aftermath of Gidon is the enormous failure of the Shofet. There's a civil war, and there's idolatry by the Shofet himself. It's enormously problematic. And then we're one generation away from Yiftach. And we've hit rock bottom. So it's problematic. And I think that that's what Chazal wanted to tell us when they said that her Nevuah escaped her. Chazal were uncomfortable with this Shira as a reflection of Nevuah, because it doesn't have that characteristic. And they saw in that moment of arrogance an example of what happens when the Navi falls short of the power of the character of the Navi, it negatively influences the substance of the Navi. Yes and no. It says Vatasher. Yes and no. It says Vatasha, which is a chi sang. It's in feminine. The same way that Shirat HaYam begins Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael. But Bnei Yisrael didn't sing it. They responded to it. Moshe sang it. Yeah, we actually did do that with last week. So it's her song to Barak. Remember, and the whole thing is in first person. When she talks about herself, she talks about herself in first person. She's talking to Barak in second person. Okay.